Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and I've got a real bad baby Yoda problem in my attic. I hear them scrounging around all the time and nibbling on the insulation. I'm gonna have to lay some traps. Well, today on the show... Star Wars animals!
Woo!
You know, those Star Wars, they got some pretty goofy animals, like tauntauns and banthas and blurgs, but I bet good old Mother Nature has whipped up some animals that are even weirder than what you can find in a Star Wars. We'll look at some of the habits of real-life porgs, find ourselves unable to hide from a monster scarier than the Sarlacc pit, and explore the world of an adorable alien-looking antelope. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, why does Luke Skywalker have hundreds of lightsabers? Is it to throw a Jedi rave? So, why does everybody love Star Wars? I'm not talking about any movie or trilogy in particular, but even when people are mad at Star Wars, it's because they love some aspect of Star Wars and they get frustrated when it's not Star Warsing the way they want it to. What causes this intense passion? Well, Harvard Law professor Cass Sunstein argues that Star Wars is about behavioral psychology. The popularity of A New Hope, he claims, was due in part to informational cascades where people base their decisions on the decisions made by other people, like lemmings going off a cliff or, in this case, people lining up at the theater, causing rumors to spread about long lines, causing more people to line up at the theaters, and so on. However, lemmings don't actually follow each other off cliffs. That's a misinformation campaign against lemmings. Likewise, not all of Star Wars' popularity is due to people being sheep or dewbacks. I'm not actually sure what the Star Wars version of sheep are, but to me, the success of Star Wars is due to two basic ingredients. A solid hero story where we feel like we could be Luke Skywalker, bullseyeing womp rats from our T-16s back at home, rising from irrelevance to save the galaxy, but the second part of its success is the rich, creature-filled universe we're dropped into, getting to discover completely new animals, beings, and ecological biomes. A diverse painting of Star Wars monsters and critters isn't just eye candy. In the original Star Wars, we got a sense of history with these alien creatures, that they had complex behaviors and evolutionary stories. Today, I want to celebrate this aspect of Star Wars by revealing that, hey, we kind of live in a Star Wars. The animals right here on Earth are just as insane, if not more so, than the things concocted by a caffeinated George Lucas. Joining me today to have a Star War is actor, writer, and film analyst Maggie Mae Fish.
Hello!
I'm so excited to have you for this one.
I'm so excited too, as soon as you told me what it was about.
I knew you would love this one, and I feel like you will bring so much to the conversation, because I like a Star War.
I like a Star War.
I don't think I've delved into the mythos probably as much as you have.
I mean, well, actually, as you were talking, I did remember that growing up I had it was like a fake biology book, but it was all about Star Wars.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it was too in-depth for me to understand as a kid, so I just looked at the photos.
I love that. I love that so much.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I would sort of draw pictures of fake animals and invent, just all sorts of animal habits for them and mating rituals and all that.
Mating rituals.
Well, I was an innocent kid, so I was like, then they sing songs to each other and they get maui'd.
And then boop.
And then somehow babies, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The song's important, though.
So first I want to talk about porgs, because they're one of my... I know that the new Star Wars is pretty controversial. It's got its ups and downs.
Ups, downs,
you know,
twists, turns.
Sideways is
whoopsies. And
some plot things that maybe aren't great. Some plot things that seemed like... Exactly, that noise. It's a Star Wars. We're doing a fussy neck on a Star Wars. But porgs are, I think... perfect. I think that they did a perfect job on that.
Yeah. When the last one came out, I saw a lot of tweets going around that was like, thank Ryan Johnson for porgs. Just thank him, because they weren't needed and they
right.
were there anyways.
Well, you know, actually they were necessary in terms of the cinematography. So they filmed the part of Star Wars where Luke was a grump. So like Rey, the new Jedi goes to Luke to get training, but Luke is old and crotchety, and he's like, I'm tired of Star Wars.
Get off my lawn, get off Star Wars.
Get off of my rock. And this rock is actually Skellig Michael. I hope that's, I'm pronouncing that right.
I was actually just there.
Oh, really?
About like 2 months ago. Yeah, we went to where they filmed those scenes in Ireland.
Yeah. It's off the coast of Ireland. It's just a big craggy rock in the middle of the ocean. It's actually the roosting spot for a ton of puffins. And when they filmed it, they're like, this is the perfect rock for us to put Luke. Mm-hmm. But there's so many puffins here. We can't edit out all the puffins.
Oh my God.
So instead of editing them out, they just turned them into porgs.
Oh, those are my favorite film stories where like there's this huge obstacle and then through creativity, they find a way to like make it work and we get porgs.
You know, that magic. To me, I think that is sort of like the mother of creation. It's like when you get a random animal that you just can't edit out of the film. So it's like, I guess we got to work with you.
I guess and they're going to be... How would you describe a porg? Like what?
It is a, I would say a penguin, a puffin, and a pug.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
The last thing, the thing in the face is a pug.
But I do have a couple of animals that people may not have heard of that I think are very porg-like.
Oh.
So, but first, you want to talk about puffins?
I do. I do want to talk about puffins.
Because puffins are pretty great. I think even without adding a like a pug face to a puffin, they're already pretty awesome.
Uh-huh.
So puffins are a group of species of auk, or they're these small seabirds. And actually, there used to be a larger version of this called the great auk, but they are extinct. They're sleeping with the fishes now. See?
Oh, see, that was good. That was pretty good, Katie. So there are almost, or I feel like, a lot of large versions of animals that used to be are extinct.
Yes.
Probably because we're the top predator, and so smaller is better.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it is resource. Mm. Like, when you're bigger, you require more resources, and it can be harder for you to find that ecological niche without going extinct.
Right.
And you're also probably, because you're bigger, maybe you don't have as many chicks per season and such. So it's like you're kind of putting all your eggs in one big old basket. Yeah, there's going to be there's going to be a lot of that. My audience is already used to me being their dad. It's fine. I'm everybody's dad.
You want to be my dad?
I'll be your dad.
Great. My dad is great, but you guys can both be my dad.
We can be co-dads.
Okay, great.
It's fine. Everyone's welcome aboard the dad train. So all living species of auks can fly in the air and underwater, including puffins. And I want to show you this because it's incredible. So see that little flapping creature? That is a puffin just flying underwater.
Oh my God.
It's different from what you would expect it. You don't think of, when you think of a, what I realized researching this is that when I try to picture penguins or puffins swimming, I just picture them diving. I didn't really picture them flapping underwater,
going
but that
around.
Is exactly what they do.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So.
And they kind of like jet. It's almost like they flap and then ride it for a while.
Yeah. And they're extremely nimble. They're totally comfortable underwater. But they can't walk so good.
Oh,
they're a little
good.
Awkward.
I know, they'll be an overachiever, triple threat animal.
So you're not
have it.
So you're not too jealous, right?
They're yeah, not, I know.
They're they nerfed that stat a little bit.
Oh, great.
So there are three species of puffins. The Atlantic puffin, which is the most iconic. I think it's like the puffin you think of. It's the puffin on that Trader Joe's cereal.
Yes.
Remember puffins?
Yes, that's the one. Yep.
Then there's also the horned puffin and the tufted puffin.
Oh.
So first, the Atlantic puffins. They are the smallest, and they're about a foot long and weigh about 12 ounces.
All right.
$1 foot long.
$1 foot long.
Don't eat puffins. Well, some people eat puffins, and that's okay. But
okay. Well, if you do already, keep
If you do already, that's fine. But don't Don't
go out of your way to eat the puffin.
Don't like accumulate the habit of eating puffins. Like,
right.
Yeah. But they live in the North Atlantic or Northern European, Scandinavian, Canadian, and Northern American coasts. So kind of up in that, like, you know, colder northerly area. They will fly to Morocco and New York in the winter, fly south to escape some of the coldness.
So they're like rich people on the East Coast. they go to Oxford during the summer.
And then we summer in Morocco. So they have brightly colored orange, black, and yellow beaks, white faces and bellies, and black backs, and a black hood. Like, they're kind of wearing a tuxedo. I mean, these are, like, rich. These are the these are very bougie birds.
Right. They're, like, the sons of, like, the bougie birds.
Right.
They wear hoodies. They, you know.
They're Zuckerbirds.
Oh my God, that one's really good.
I'm gonna kill Maggie in this episode. She's just gonna like choke and then fall over.
It's okay, Dad.
Too many buns.
It's okay.
I killed her with my dad powers.
Help!
It's like the force choke, but it's dad.
But it's dad powers. Just cutting off your circulation. So,
let me show you a picture of these guys. They're very, very cute.
Oh,
just a little dude.
They are so iconic. They must be on. I think there was a National Geographic that was pretty popular with their face on it.
Yeah,
it's like burned into my brain.
It's very iconic, and they've got those kind of like triangle eye situation. They have a little bit of a cat's eye, but it's going directly up, which is really, you know, I don't know, innovative.
That's cool.
You may not have heard of the other two species of puffins. So the horned puffin, let me show you a picture of these guys because they're pretty cool.
They're pretty cool.
I don't know if you've heard of these guys, but they're pretty cool.
They're pretty cool.
Look at that guy's eyeliner.
They are very cool. Looks like Lady Gaga. Like,
it's very Gaga-esque.
Yes.
That horn is actually really interesting. So they are about 15 inches long and a little over a pound, so a little bigger than the Atlanta puffin.
Big boy.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, big just boy. Like about pork size, I guess.
Okay.
It's a handful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A good puffin full, you know, hand of puffin.
Yeah, yeah.
Solid kind
puffin
of.
Hands. Yeah.
And they live in the North Pacific and they winter south to California in Baja, California.
Oh,
so more of these bougie birds.
Yeah, geez, get out of here.
They have a larger beak, like vertically, it kind of is taller than the Atlantic puffin. Their beak is light yellow near the face and tipped in orange. And they have that really dramatic eyeliner going straight up. And it's actually it's not eyelashes. It's actually a fleshy extension, like kind of horn that grows out of their eyelid. And they're just like these little doodads.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of that on their face?
As far as I know, I think it's just sexual selection.
Ooh.
I think that their fancy coloration. It's kind of like their beak is so brightly colored too.
Mm-hmm.
All puffins have that really brightly colored beak for sexual selection, and they actually shed that beak in off mating seasons
because it's duller,
so it's like bright during the mating seasons, and then they shed it and regrow it, and when they're not mating it's duller because they're regrowing it and they don't need it to be bright all the time.
It's like when I wear my pajamas around outside, like,
right,
I don't need people to be looking at me.
I like fancy like day to night pajamas. Like sequin pajamas.
Oh yeah. You could just, it's pajamas, but no one knows.
No one has to know.
No one has to know.
So next are the tufted puffins. I feel like these are especially dramatic puffins. So they've got...
Oh, hello.
Yes.
And he looks like Bradley Cooper. What?
They have these big old tufts of feathers coming off of the sides of their faces. So they're also a little bigger than the Atlantic puffin. They're almost 2 pounds. My God.
You could fit half on each hand.
You could like weightlift these puffins a mild exercise.
For mild / not at all exercise.
Listen, everybody's got their own goals, all right? Everybody sets their own goals. I'm comparing myself to me, not to anybody else.
How's your New Year's going? How's your resolutions coming?
So they also live in the North Pacific, and they have black bodies with a white face mask and these two tufts of feathers just shooting off. And you know, like the Twi'leks in Star Wars, the Twi'lek
Yes.
You know how they have those flesh, the flesh horns, the head tails that come off? It looks exactly like that.
It looks exactly like that.
Yeah. Weird, right?
Weird.
Who was this real Star Wars the whole time? Star Wars or Puffins?
Star Wars or Puffins. Exactly. What came first, the animal or George Lucas?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So some quick Puffin facts to, because like Puffins aren't just a pretty face with crazy dongles coming off their heads. Mm-hmm. Puffins are unusual in that they don't, they have little sexual dimorphism, meaning that both males and females have the pretty bright coloration, which
ooh,
is.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
I
it's
really
usually,
like that.
Usually the male birds are the ones putting on all the effort and all
right.
the makeup, and it's just nice to see some gender parity there.
Yeah, huh.
And they eat mostly small fish like herring, and they can dive into the ocean almost 200 feet underwater.
Wow. Just, I have no visual concept for that, but it sounds like a
lot. It's a lot of feet.
That's a lot
it's
of feet.
It's about 200 feet.
That's
of feet.
Seems like a lot
200
of feet.
200 feet is about 200
yeah.
of them. Yeah.
I can't picture it, but it seems like a lot.
It's a lot.
Lot
yeah,
of
it's a lot. I mean, if one puffin is about a foot,
so
that's like 200 puffin lengths. Yeah. They can also carry huge numbers of fish in their little beaks. They can carry 10 fish per trip. Sometimes they can carry even more, but 10's about their average. Mm-hmm. And they have these rasping hooked tongues, a large bill, and these denticles, which means tooth-like projections coming off of their beak. So if you look inside the puffin beak, you pop open the hood of a puffin, and it's kind of gnarly.
That looks like an alien.
Yeah, it's like it's got these cute chubby cheeks and this cute little eyeliner, and then it's just got like I don't know, like a xenomorph coming out of its face.
Weird. Huh. Sexy, if I'm a puffin.
Here's some other stats about puffins. They can flap their wings up to 400 times per minute in the air.
Oh.
Pretty impressive, I think.
Have you ever tried? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That's not going to do it.
That wasn't close, huh?
During mating season, thousands of puffins gather together on rocky coastlines to breed and to interrupt Star Wars shoots.
Oh, yeah. Huh, hey. Well, you know, what a more romantic date than being on set at a new Star Wars movie.
Like, look, Maureen, they're shooting a Star Wars.
Oh, they're Star Wars.
Oh, they're shooting Star Wars over there.
Oh, that's great.
It's so...
Should we go somewhere else?
No, let's just do it here.
Okay.
And they are sweet birds because they often remain monogamous, sometimes up to 20 years, which is about their lifespan.
Dang, that's about the lifespan of marriages.
If you want it, put a wing on it. Oh, God, I've killed her. Mackie Mayfish was a much beloved YouTuber and film analyst who sadly passed away after being dadded to death.
Dun, dun. My parents would not mourn me.
No. Well, I'm your dad now, and I would. So here, maybe this will bring you back to life. A baby puffin is called a puffling.
Stop.
I won't stop.
I will not stop.
Just to quickly get through the sad things is that seagulls like to eat them sometimes.
Oh, is there that's actually interesting.
Yeah.
You would think they'd be on the same team, but goes
no,
to show
birds,
me.
No, birds, they're all in it for number one, I think, if we've learned anything about birds. But another thing that threatens the puffin is overfishing and pollution. And there's been an alarming decline in the Shetland puffin population off the coast of Scotland.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I mean, we should care about the puffins.
We should care about the puffins.
Yeah, they're not gone yet. They're not going away anytime soon. But they're, you know. We gotta care.
Let's keep an eye out.
Let's
you know, and I, Katie, we'll go save them.
just march
here.
On out there. And...
Your dad's here to save you, kids.
I'd love to be the daddy of all the puffins.
Would that?
That would be fun.
I can picture you just living in Scotland, just me your kids.
Like, come to me, my pufflings. My army of pufflings have arrived. So to get a porg, we have sort of the puffin body is pretty apparent in the porg. I mean, they had to, I guess, sort of match the puffins pretty closely for the filming.
Yeah.
But you also, I think there's a couple of animals who's got that face, the face cuteness.
Yeah.
So first is the Japanese dwarf flying squirrel. They are these adorable big-eyed squirrels.
Oh, my God. I don't think I've ever seen this before.
It doesn't look real, right?
No, it looks like a... It looks like Thumper, the bunny
from Bambi. Yeah. It's got huge, like cartoonishly big eyes, and it's adorable. It
seems like it's almost as if it evolved to be adorable. To be cute.
Yeah.
There's no way we could get rid of it.
You wouldn't eat me, would you?
You wouldn't eat me, would you?
That's much more sinister. It's like they have the cute face, but they didn't really evolve the voice to match.
Right. You wouldn't eat me, would you?
So they live in the subalpine and boreal forests of Japan. They're about 8 inches long, not big. And they weigh about half a pound, a little under half a pound.
All right.
Little guys.
Yeah.
About baseball.
About baseball.
Sometimes they're used as baseballs. No.
In Japan, which is why Japan is pretty good at baseball.
So they are very fluffy with light gray fur on their backs and white tummies and fluffy tails. And as their name suggests, they can kind of fly. Well, it's more like controlled falling. So they have a patagium, which is a membrane of skin between their little forelimb ankles and their hind feet ankles, and they can extend that out and glide down like a person in a body fly. What's it called? A flight suit.
There's no way to know. Glide suit.
Yeah.
Also, Buzz Lightyear. Balls of a style.
I see. Yes, exactly. Yeah. They really are the Buzz Lightyears of the animal
Japan?
Kingdom. They're probably actually a lot more adept than Buzz Lightyear.
Probably. He's not very helpful.
No. What did he even do? Nothing.
Nothing really.
Garbage.
He caused a stir is what he did.
He did make what he developed as a character, which I guess
That's
is good.
True. Yeah. I don't know.
Here's a video of one of these guys.
It is
extremely cute.
Oh,
they just kind of they love jumping around.
Jumping from a tall man to a short man. That's what they're doing on this video. They're
sort of cosplaying as trees, I guess, to help the flying squirrel feel more at home. Another little animal that I think is pretty porg-like is the desert rain frog.
Oh.
And I've talked about this guy on the show before, but I think it is an animal that bears repeating. It's not a bear, it's a frog, but it bears repeating. So it makes a very, very cute sound.
Oh.
So that is, so you know, the little porg sound is like, this I think is even cuter. And here's a picture of one of these guys. It is basically just a frowning bubble.
Oh, I love it.
Just a grumpy frown. So that little perpetual frown that the porgs have, the desert rain frog and the black rain frog have that expression.
I think you nailed it. Those animals together exactly
make a porg.
Yeah.
And so these guys live in South Africa. They live in the Cape Fold belt in forests in Fynbos, which is a belt of shrubland vegetation. They live in a climate of dry summers and mild wet winters. They actually don't need to live right near a big body of water. They do fine with like moisture inside the sand and the ground. They are so round that they can't hop. They just
really?
Kind of waddle around.
Oh my God, that's funny.
They also give birth to froglets. So just little.
Oh,
little,
so no eggies.
No eggs, just like tinier versions of themselves.
Interesting.
Which is such a weird way to give birth, you know?
Yeah, especially for frogs because they're so used to the tadpole
yeah,
cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
The,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, it just pops out or be like, hey, it's me, and do that. Like, hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
Hello, my white dog girl.
So they burrow into the sand, and they have these huge eyes that, like, big old perpetual frown. And as if to kind of underscore their appearance as a little grumpy ball, they also squeak angrily when provoked. So that's what you're hearing. That is their angry squeak.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
So we've done it. We've made a porg.
We've made a porg.
Now, if we can just get those dang old scientists to put all those genes together in a big old vial, right? You just shake it around. That's how science works. That's how you do it.
That's how I assume it works.
And you pour it out and it's got porg.
Yeah. Why didn't they do that?
I don't know. I mean, scientists, I'm not going to tell you how to do your jobs, but maybe do your jobs.
Maybe do your jobs. Jeez.
The Force is important for Jedis and Sith, but is the Force important for animals? Behavioral researchers have studied how the perception of control over your environment can affect your performance on tasks. Remember that scene where Obi-Wan tells Luke to turn his Google Maps off and to take out the Death Star using the Force? That kind of confidence in being able to manipulate your world really does lead to a performance boost. In the 1970s, researchers conducted studies on people and animals, testing to see how they responded to control or a lack of control over their environments, especially when faced with an unpleasant stimulus. And let's just say the researchers were kind of Darth Vader-y. In one study, they gave dogs small electric shocks, allowing one group of dogs to stop the shocks by pressing a metal bar, but the other group had no such option. Real nice Darth Vader nerds. Anyways, the dogs who were given control over the shocks were able to figure out an escape path from the shocky room, whereas the other dogs had given up, probably while giving subtle middle paw fingers to the researchers. This kind of result has been replicated in other studies, where control over one's environment improves the health and ability to accomplish tasks in both humans and animals. So even though the Force may not let you lift up spaceships, believing that you have the Force may be a powerful thing itself. Still doesn't let me will the remote control over towards me. Oh well, wait, maybe if I believe really hard. No, not doing it. When we return, we'll explore the dark side of the Force with a very real and very horrible monster who haunts my dreams. Screen Crawl, Episode 4, Imagination Station. It is a period of oceanic civil war. Fluke Skywater, a young, handsome, and slightly irritating fish, has been captured by Boba Fish and is being held by Blubber the Hutt, along with his friends Finn Solo, Fincess, Rayfish, and other cool fish friends. Blubber the Hutt's evil squid guards have led Fluke Skywalker and the gang over to an unassuming pile of sand on the ocean floor. "Sand, huh?" says Fluke Skywalker. "That's all you got? I'm not afraid of some stupid sand." Suddenly, the sand starts to churn like a volcano about to erupt, and as fast as underwater lightning, a pair of huge blade-like jaws burst from the ground, followed by a long, iridescent purple worm-like body. Fluke Skywalker barely has time to register the sight of this tentacled, pearlescent, blade-faced worm creature before he is cut clean in half by its massive jaws. So yeah, that's I feel like a better version of the Sarlacc pit.
That was a better version than the movie that I saw a couple weeks ago.
I mean, like, okay, I get in the movie, you can't kill off the hero. However, it would have been pretty rad.
It would have been really rad. And no spoilers, but they did, but then they didn't. And then they did, and then they didn't. So
with the killing off the hero thing back and forth. Just like measure twice with the Sarlacc pit and cut once is my thing. Like,
oh, then, there you go.
Then you don't have to keep bringing the hero back and forth right. From death and stuff.
Just die
in the Sarlacc. I think that would have been great. Star War over.
That would have been really symbolic. Yeah. You know?
Exactly. The massive beak and tentacles symbolizes hubris?
You're
gonna say hubris.
Yeah, the man's attempt to meet a giant monster?
Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about a real life. Is it called a Sarlacc worm, or is it just the pit is called the Sarlacc pit?
You know, that was in this big heavy book that I had growing up that I could not read. I think
I'm not a nerd, so I didn't read it.
Oh man, I would assume that the pit is just the pit that the Sarlacc.
Right.
Lives
but
in.
it is called a Sarlacc, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, a real life
watch us get murdered.
Just like Twitter is like actually if you refer to the compendium of Star Wars
theory.
The book.
I was gonna pull it out.
This is called the Bobbit Worm, which is also known as the Sand Striker. It's a scientific name is a little less menacing. It's Unis Aphroditois. Aphroditois? Unis?
Sexy.
Maybe Eunice?
Right?
Eunice.
Aphrodite.
So it is pretty if you look at it through very different perspective than normal. Uh-oh. So it's a species of bristleworm that lives on the ocean floor in the Atlantic Ocean. It's not a deep sea fish, despite how horrifying it looks. It often inhabits coral reefs because that's where its unsuspecting prey likes to hang out. The reason it's called the Bobbitt worm is allegedly because of the John and Lorena Bobbitt case. Do you know of that one?
Yes.
That was that, I think it was in the 90s or 80s.
Uh-huh.
And it's actually kind of, I feel like it's always kind of awkward when it's joked about because, so the short version of it is Lorena Bobbitt is a woman who cut off her husband John's penis after alleged domestic abuse.
Oh, this is, yes, okay. Yeah.
And it's actually, so that's kind of horrifying, but then the media back in the day was like, look at this funny thing. And,
oh, I do actually, yes, I know the controversy surrounding it. Yeah.
And, you know, look, in the natural world, there are all sorts of fun penis hijinks, but I think in this case, it's kind of inappropriate how it was made fun of.
There's a lot of other weird penises to laugh at. Maybe
exactly. You know. Maybe not in this case that involves domestic violence and things. But I think that the Bobbitt worm is allegedly named after that, not because it's like phallic, but because of its ability to cut things in half, which you could.
Or because it might be. It feels like it's a double entendre.
Maybe it is. I think whoever named this scientist was a dirty bird.
Dirty bird, you little stinker.
So the Bobbitt worm is even more unbelievable looking than the Sarlacc to me. Let me get you a picture.
Oh.
Yeah, see how it's kind of like rainbow and iridescent?
Yeah. It reminds me, I am one of the very few people that I don't find cockroaches very gross.
Oh, really?
I think they look fine. Like, the look of it doesn't creep me out. And that kind of looks like a cockroach where it's, I think cockroaches are kind of like a pretty color. It's kind of like that red brown.
You know what's funny is I am probably one of the most like accepting random people of like insects, but cockroaches is one thing I'm not accepting of.
Ooh.
It's like I have no, like the Bobbitt worm to me looks kind of pretty. It's like, you're rainbow and you got giant jaws, that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, cockroaches, I think it's that they're so, they get it right in there,
they,
you know,
get right,
they
get right in. That is the thing I don't like about them. The thing for me that's like that is millipedes or centipedes.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I actually like those guys, but and I like the giant hissing cockroaches because those are somehow it's the ones that I just associate with, like, you know,
in the kitchen,
you're walking late at night, your foot touches something crunchy on the floor and you look down. So this guy, though, is a long, 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 long worm. It is iridescent. It's got like a rainbow sheen. It's got a hard segmented exoskeleton. And it's also got kind of a purplish hue to it. Unfortunately, you can't see its horrifying, beautiful majesty because most of the time it's buried under the sandy ocean floor. It can grow up to 10 feet long.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's 10 puffins.
That's 10 puffins.
That's 10 puffins long.
It's just a puffin walking around like, doo, 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 doo.
My family.
I have 17 kids. It's actually kind of a thin noodle guy because it's only about an inch in diameter. So I don't know that it could fit a puffin inside of it, which I guess is good news for the puffins. It's got spiny leg-like appendages all over its body, which is just great. It's got a horrific feeding apparatus called a pharynx, which includes these massive jaws that are like these just two sabers that just close on anything unlucky enough to have that happen to, which is mostly fish and sometimes octopuses. And it also has five striped antennae that look like little tentacles, which it uses to sense prey as it approaches. And those set of giant bone hard serrated mandibles will just like snap close as soon as those tentacles detect movement. Yeah, it's like it's like a mouse trap, but
that's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's
like
brilliant.
An eldritch mouse trap. And at night, it pokes his head out of its little hidey hole, and it goes like, "Ooh, hello,
hello.
It's time to catch some fish." I don't know why it has a cute name. Cute little voice like that.
I think it's probably cute. He's long and skinny. He's a big skinny old man.
I'm a big old noodle boy and I'm going to eat me some fish. Rebranding the Bobbit Worm as a lovable children's character.
That's what it needs. It needs
exactly.
A rebrand.
Exactly. It needs some marketing.
Yeah. The Snorlax. Right. The Sarlacc. The Snorlax. That's a Pokemon.
Snorlax's a Pokemon, I think. I guess this one could be a Pokemon, too, to be honest. So once it's that antenna mousetrap gets set off and those jaws close in, they can actually cut a fish in half. That's how powerful they are. And if it will certainly stun the fish. Mm-hmm. And once that fish gets grabbed, it will pull it under the sand, never to be seen again.
Bum, 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 bum.
And as the fish tries to escape, that sandy ground can just kind of pulsate with like the fish kind of trying to resurface.
Ow! And it's like flip-flopping,
right,
like,
and then
land.
The and the Bobbit Worm, you just see it like yanking it, and then like stillness. You want to see it?
Yeah, it's like, real bad.
So there it is, laying in wait, and it's like it's kind of pretty. It's rainbow colored.
It is gorgeous. The rainbow sheen is gorgeous, actually.
I would love nail polish and with that kind of like sheen on it. Other than the big old mandibles, it's pretty neat. And then once it grabs it, you can see this like the struggle.
And it yanks it down.
Isn't that horrifying?
Wow. Whoa. And it's gone.
It's gone. And then you can see the ground kind of like pulsate. And it just yanks it so forcefully.
Wow.
It's like such a horror movie thing, isn't it?
Yes. But also weirdly beautiful. When an animal's so well adapted like that, it's just like fascinating to watch them do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, go get it, girl. That's your thing.
Do your thing.
Do your thing.
You know who you are. You're a horrifying hell beast who snatches fish and drags them underneath to the netherworld. Right. And you do it well.
You do it well with a beautiful rainbow sheen.
Find your niche.
While.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. Apparently, the mandibles may even inject some toxin into the fish, which I feel like is kind of gilding the lily.
I was going to say, would it even need that?
I don't know. I feel like it's just a little, like, okay, calm down now.
All right. We're not eating puffins here, okay?
Yeah.
Just calm. And if you do, that's fine. But don't start, again, if you don't. So
Bobbit worms are actually a big problem for aquarists, aquarium owners, from hobbyists to even, like, public aquariums. So baby bobbits.
Baby bobbit.
They can hitch a ride on commercial aquatic plants for saltwater aquariums. They can even hide in coral that you can buy at the store. And then once they get in your tank, they don't stay baby bobbits for too long.
No, they don't.
They grow and grow and grow. And
to ten puffins.
And some people would be like, my fish are just disappearing.
Oh, no.
And it's a big mystery. And then you dismantle your tank and you find a bobbit.
Oh, my God.
In the bottom.
Yeah, what a horror story.
I know. Well, Newquay's Blue Reef Aquarium in the UK, there was a news story about this where it's this aquarium open to the public, big old tanks, and they found that their fish just were going missing.
It was
what's happening to our fish? It's this murder mystery. And they finally realized it was a bobbit worm, and they couldn't catch it. They couldn't lure it out of its hole, so they had to dismantle the entire aquarium.
Oh my God!
To get this huge bobbit worm out. Yeah.
That's really funny.
What a stinker.
Funny stinker. And also, it's not like he chose that life, so.
The bobbit life?
Yeah.
So yeah, if you own an aquarium, a saltwater aquarium, and your fish are just disappearing, you may have a horrifying worm living in there.
Yeah.
I would love a tank, though, just filled with bobbit worms.
Oh, the bobbits.
Yeah, and you just buy fish to, like, feed it. And this fish is like, wow, this is a nice new home. Just eerie silence. Wonder where all the other fish are.
Hello? Hello.
So I think to fight the bobbit worm, we need a fluke Skywater. And I have just the fish for the job, the secret lightsaber sharks. So these are species of sharks who can glow in the dark using biofluorescence, which is a relatively recent discovery because we can't see it with the naked eye.
I have been binging nature documentaries. Because they admit frequencies.
I approve, by the way, of that.
Thank you. because there's some light that we can't see. We didn't realize that they were emitting it.
Yes. Exactly. So biofluorescence is naked to those of us who are not strong in the shark force. So to see it, marine biologists used a blue light camera, which mimics the shark eyes that see in blue and green. And so for sharks, this glowing green biofluorescence just pops out like a Christmas tree. And sorry, like a Creature Kringle Times tree.
Oh, sorry. What I meant was.
So the biofluorescence lights up in these beautiful green glowing patterns. I know you've probably seen it before, but let me just show you because it's great. Look at that.
Oh, that's
gorgeous.
It looks like, you know, when you see those maps where it's like, here's Paris from space.
That's right. That's right. Like a satellite map of the Earth as the cities are all alight. Maybe we're just a big shark.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. This is too much for my brain.
There's always a bigger fish.
So this has been found in cat sharks and swell sharks, and it's thought to be in many other species as well. A cat shark and a swell shark, they're cute little guys. You can hold them like a baby.
Oh, they got a baby?
Yeah, I mean, they might nibble on you if you try to hold them. They're generally non-threatening to humans at all. They're cuties. They're cute little sharks.
Oh, I like cute sharks.
I know. They're adorable. And this recent discovery reveals that they may use this biofluorescence to communicate with each other. The glowing patterns are unique to each species of shark and even to each sex of shark. So there seems to be some like almost like a business card of
Or like a text.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You up?
Yeah, or
hello?
like a profile, like a Facebook profile or something, like some kind of form of communication.
Right. Here's where I'm from. I like adventures.
ASL? and this glow is generated by newly discovered glowing compounds that are amplified by these tiny rigid denticles. So denticles, like we talked about it with the puffins in their beaks, denticles are tooth-like projections, so they don't have to occur in the mouth. They can also be on the skin. So on these sharks, they have tiny teeth all over their bodies. You're making a face.
Yeah. As you're describing to me, I don't like it.
You don't want to be covered in teeth? Well, to each their own. But these little projections, these little spiny projections actually help amplify the glowing compounds like a lightsaber. So the scientists describe them as being like these hundreds and hundreds of lightsabers all over the shark's skin.
He specifically described them as lightsabers?
Yes, they
That's
did.
That's really
they did.
Funny. Nerds.
So biofluorescence, you may be thinking of bioluminescence, but similar vibe, but they are different things. So bioluminescence absorbs light from the sun and re-emits it as a different color, whereas bioluminescence is light that's been created from a chemical reaction. That explains also why we can't see this biofluorescence with our naked eye. We can see bioluminescence with the naked eye, this light that's been created from these chemical reactions. It's very bright, glows very bright, whereas the biofluorescence, it's almost like it's
like
reflecting. Yeah, it's like translating the sun into a different color, and it's visible to a shark's eye. And it also, another weird finding is that this biofluorescence may have antimicrobial properties.
Oh,
yeah,
hey,
just throw that in there.
Cut, you know, you just rub it up against his teeth, little light teeth.
I wonder if in Star Wars they use lightsabers in like surgery, like a surgeon has like a tiny lightsaber.
Yes, you would say,
you know,
right?
Like a scalpel lightsaber.
It cauterizes it
right,
as
exactly.
You go.
Like a Jedi neurosurgeon with a tiny scalpel, like made out of lightsaber, right?
There are so many more uses for lightsaber.
Right, exactly. Toast.
Toast.
You slice the bread and you toast it at the same time.
God, that's what I wanted to see in The Mandalorian.
Right,
just like toast and bread. What's up with that?
Writing on Variety.com. The Mandalorian fell short of expectations. I wanted to see a more versatile lightsaber.
Such a, I don't know, tiny one to cut people's spleen open.
Yeah, I would like to see some lightsaber surgery,
That'd
you know?
Be cool. Yeah, where's the doctors?
I know, where are the doctors?
Where are
the doctors? We only saw one, right? The robot orb with a big old syringe.
Yes, robot orb. And then also whoever was taking care of Padme when she died from sadness. So, like, can we even trust them? Like, maybe
like,
that's why they don't have doctors.
Dr. Nick. Oh, no, you've got some kind of disease. Like from The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
Just doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah, and then I guess But and then another doctor, I guess Luke was in a vat of some kind to regrow. True. But that's like most of the doctors are just like a vat, like a big old vat going like, get in my tummy and I'll heal you.
Right.
You know, or like an orb that's like, you know, it's me.
Menacing.
Doc, me, Dr. Vaccines, here's your flu shot. Why are you ready?
Yeah, come back. Hello.
Flu season is bad this year. Get your flu shot.
It's free.
Why do we love monsters so much? Sometimes monsters are a response to cultural fears. In Star Wars, the monsters are often gargantuan or of unseen proportions, like the Sarlacc pit, the spaceship-eating worms, the mysterious tentacled creature that lurks in the garbage masher in the detention level. Even the man-made monstrosities, like the Death Star, can destroy entire planets. This kind of catastrophic level of monsters seems to me to reflect the fears of the Cold War. Nuclear weapons that are a constant threat, but one that seems to be lurking in the shadows, one that could emerge suddenly and destroy our world. Throughout our history, there have been many monsters. Monsters like vampires may have been a response to the fears around sudden illness and death, and mysterious wasting diseases like consumption, otherwise known as tuberculosis. The zombies of the 2000s may have reflected our fears of the masses. As our world became more connected through vast cities and our ability to travel, we also shared our problems, such as epidemics. My prediction is that new monsters will emerge in the 2020s, ones that reflect the fears of today, such as climate change and extinction. Maybe huge, gluttonous monsters that devour resources and level entire forests. Maybe, just maybe, we were the monsters the whole time! I'm just kidding, the Bobbit worms are definitely the monsters. When we return, we'll rip off our Darth Vader helmet and return to the light side of the Force with an incredibly goofy creature. My favorite part of Star Wars is trying to figure out how all their goofball creatures could have evolved. Why is the Tauntaun bipedal on huge kangaroo legs? Is it to hop over icy crags and chasms? Why do banthas have such huge horns? Are they used in mating contests or sexual selection? Does the wampa like to capture live prey and store it in its larder like a shrew? Does the rancor have a good relationship with its keeper? Can it be trained to do fun tricks? There's no amount of goofiness Star Wars can throw at us that doesn't exist in real animals in the real world with real incredible explanations. So let's look at one of the wackiest looking mammals in the world and figure out why it looks so dang lovable and kooky. So have you ever heard of the Saiga antelope?
No, I don't think so.
So the Saiga antelope is like a cross between a tauntaun and an antelope and like an elephant and a tapir.
Ooh.
It is a real goofball. So these are critically endangered species of antelope. They are found in grasslands and semi-deserts in Central Asia, which includes a little part of Russia, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, Uzbekistan, and Turkmenistan. They used to have a much wider range and a much bigger population, but of course, after overhunting, their population declined.
Ding, ding, ding.
We did it again.
We did it again.
We extincted an animal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember Britney Spears, you guys?
I do remember.
It's 2020.
I do, man.
But no, they're not extinct yet, but they are critically endangered. Mm. And these guys are goofy as hell. Mm. They're real goofballs. Let me show you. I got a whole slideshow here of these guys.
Oh, yes.
So here's an adult, and they have a big, big nose that's just this, it's like a big old macaroni, right?
Yeah, and it's just kind of, it looks like it's just sitting on its head.
Right, right, like some kind of like as an afterthought glued it on.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the baby one, this is a fawn.
Oh, the baby's really
looks adorable. Still has that big floppy nose.
Mm-hmm.
Very cute. I think the adults are cute too. They're goofy.
I think they're cute, they're goofy, they're silly.
Right, they look like a Muppet or like a Sesame Street Muppet, mm-hmm. like the Snuffleupagus. But with a shorter nose. So the snout, which is called a proboscis, it kind of looks like a truncated elephant trunk.
Mm-hmm.
truncated trunk. I'm just bad at talking. That's not actually a pun.
I'm just bad.
So they're not that big. They're about 2 to 3 feet tall at the shoulders and about 60 to 150 pounds. So they're
that's
like,
actually not that big.
Not that big. They kind of seem like they would be bigger, like a big, horse-like or deer-like. But they're not that big. Mm. We're taller than them. So take that.
Shove that up your nose.
Up your big old nose.
Nose troubles.
So they're light brown tan in the summer, and their coat changes in the winter to a fluffier grayish white coat. It's pretty nice.
Fancy.
And they are most famous for that huge tubular nose. These big
tubular
nose, dude. You could do some sick flips off that nose.
Sick flips.
And they're not. They have like. Biologically speaking, their nostrils are just inflated, I guess. Just huge nostrils that forms this. Well, that's a good question, and I actually have an answer.
Oh,
so
goody.
That huge nose has a few purposes. Mm-hmm. One of them is...
Looks. Looks cute.
Looks good.
Uh-huh.
Functions great. Whisper quiet. So it helps filter dust as huge herds kick up things as they're... Because they do these mass migrations, and if you're
well,
in the middle...
Well, not anymore. There's only a few left.
Yep, that is... Oh, it's so sad. Wah, wah. But when you're in the midst of one of these mass migrations, everyone's kicking up dust, you're going to get a bunch of dust in your lungs, and that's no fun.
That's no fun.
So these huge noses prevents that dust from entering the lungs by making it... It basically has to, like, go through this labyrinth of, like, chambers and vestibules, and it just, like, captures the dust, and it can't enter the lungs. It also, this big nose can function as an AC unit, just like this air conditioner shoved onto its face, because as it sucks in, as the blood runs through it and the air passes over the blood, it cools the blood that is circulating.
Oh, whoa.
I know.
That is tubular, man. Blow my mind.
And then in the winter, it converts to a space heater. I mean, it doesn't actually go through that much many changes. Mm-hmm. It's just as air is entering, it's cavernous and it's surrounded in blood vessels and stuff, so it warms the air coming in. It's a multifunctional. It's sexy, multifunctional. I mean, what can't
this nose do? Yeah,
you know.
That's a great question.
Probably. Maybe they could play it like an Instrobo, like Max Rebo from Star Wars.
Oh, my God.
Isn't there there's a little Star Wars animal who he doesn't have an instrument. He's like playing his nose like it's like a pipe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like he's holding it and playing it. Yeah.
If I'm remembering that correctly. Sure. Yeah.
So like I mentioned earlier, Saiga's journey on these massive migrations and it, when you look at them from the sky, and this is sadly, like you pointed out, this may not become a thing if these guys continue their decline. But when you look at it from the sky, it looks like this huge river of like fluff of these antelope just like migrating together. And they're so fluffy and they're so cool. And it's just like this flowing river of cute fluff.
Oh, adorable.
In 2015, 200,000 Saiga mysteriously died off, which was a huge blow to them because that was like over half of their population.
Whoa.
And researchers recently discovered the cause of this mysterious plague as being hemorrhagic septicemia. Yeah, hemorrhagic septicemia, which was caused by a bacteria called Pasteurella multocida, which... Usually this bacteria is found in these antelope. It actually grows in their nose.
Oh.
The nose is nice, cavernous. It's like a little cave.
Yeah, so I mean, of course, we've got pockets of things. Places to put animals.
This is a big pocket, but yeah. And so it's a nice place for bacteria to grow, and normally that's okay. However, as the weather was much warmer and more humid than it usually was, these bacteria grew out of control and caused this hemorrhagic septicemia. Yeah, septicemia. And so now only about 100,000 Saiga remain in the wild.
That's like the things that we don't think about with like temperatures rising.
Yeah.
Like when people brush it off, it's like you did not know that was going to happen. And
who could predict that you have an animal that has a huge old nose,
right?
And then the bacteria can grow better in the nose when it's hotter and more humid.
Yeah.
It's crazy, right? It's like, and that's just
and
one
so
thing,
half of them
right?
die.
Right, exactly. It's
yes, and that's just one example of millions of things like that.
It's like
that
you
happen.
Take out a Jenga piece and then suddenly all these noses fall from the sky.
But, all these cavernous noses.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't want to end on such a bummer note. There is some good news, which is that there are these ecological protections aimed at saving the saiga that are starting to gain traction. So China has banned saiga antelope horns from being covered by health insurance, which is a pretty big thing because I know that I think that the antelope horn has been used in some traditional medicine, which unfortunately, you know, then poachers will take the antelope horn, and that's bad for their population. The U.S. and Mongolia have backed a plan to ban the trade of saiga antelope horns, and their population is slowly starting to increase in Kazakhstan.
Aww.
So I really hope we can pull it together, because I would be devastated if these guys were no longer around, because they're just such... God, they are such lovable goofballs.
Yeah, and they're also kind of like inspiring in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like, use your imagination, you know? Anything is possible. Look at these guys. This exists.
Like
it's ungodly.
If they can pull it off, we can pull anything off.
We can do anything. We can save the planet.
Yes, exactly.
One puffin at a time.
One puffin, one big old proboscis at a time. Yeah, I don't know. There's something, I think... I love that they basically look like a normal antelope and then just with a big elephant seal nose stuck on the front of it, like an afterthought. It's wonderful. I'll definitely include links in the show notes to pictures of these guys because they're incredible.
Take a look. Get a tattoo of them.
Yeah, maybe I should.
You should.
You know?
Would that be, I mean, like, that'd be great. You could always show someone.
Or just like a nose attachment, you know?
A hat where it attaches the nose.
Ooh,
to your face.
A balaclava that's just like with the ooh, nose, you know, like a sort of crochet one, and then it has that big nose.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it'll work for me too.
Yeah, I see you pulling that off.
I think I could do it.
I think you could do it.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You got any? Before I would go, I guess like any kind of like. Thoughts about Star Wars?
Man, I mean, well, yeah, from your opening, I think that is a reason why people like it. You know, the different biomes, the joke about, like, each planet being a different type of
the
weather.
The ice planet of
the
Hoth.
The ice planet is hilarious, but also...
The
like,
humid planet the of your orb.
The water planet with water. Do you get it?
This planet is grass, I guess.
That was not that important. This one's a city.
This planet. One's deserts.
This one's a casino. And it goes on and on and on.
This one is a smart and save.
So, I didn't see that in The Mandalorian. Didn't see any smart and save planets.
Oh my god, if The Mandalorian and the Yoda went to like a smart and final planet and they're
well,
like
you gotta feed
going
the kid,
around.
You know?
Yeah, and like Baby Yoda's like pulling things off the shelves.
Crying.
And he's like, no, you can't eat that now. Yeah. And he's crying. He's like, okay, just one. But then he eats two.
That would be, I would.
And he's got like a baby Bjorn. He's like carrying it around. Yeah.
He's like really bougie all of a sudden. He's like one of those bougie Santa Monica moms.
He's like doing his assassinations with the baby Bjorn and like the thing. That's a Mandalorian I would approve. Well, you got anything to plug?
Yeah, you guys can find my film video essays on my YouTube channel at just my name, Maggie Mae Fish. Mae spelled M-A-E, not like the month.
Yeah, so check your month preconceptions at the door.
Right. Okay. we have some really fun ones coming out. We have an hour-long video about Cats, the movie, the play, and Tia Sally the Man.
Give me that Cats content.
It's bananas.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. I will be in full Cats costume for
at
least half of it.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'm sold.
So it'll be exciting, but we're still working on it. But you can check out my past ones. You can follow me on Twitter. Again, just at my name, Maggie Mae Fish.
You've got a Star Wars episode or two, right?
I do. Yeah. We talk Star Wars.
Yeah.
We talk dads. I have a series on dads.
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 It was meant to be. I was meant to be your dad.
Oh,
Unexpected heartwarming. Yeah. Conclusion. Well, did you mention your Twitter handle? Or?
Oh, yeah. It's just my name.
Just your name.
Just my name.
Maggie Mae Fish.
Yeah, look it up. But follow me. I'll talk. I'll tweet some fun stuff.
Yeah. You can find us on Instagram at Creature Feature Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Creature Feet Pod. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. There is a Creature Feet Pod, but it's different. It's actually fun. It's just a bunch of animal feet.
Aw, that is cute.
And I think that there's a change happening with the website. I think we're now on iHeart. But yeah, if you just check out the Twitter and the Facebook and the Instagram. It's all the links are on there. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Katie Golden. Not like the month Golden.
Oh my God.
Spelled G-O-L-D-I-N.
Oh.
And I'm also pro bird rights, where I fight the eternal struggle to get birds the presidency.
I really admire your work in that sector. And I meant to bring it up earlier.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I mean,
as a fish myself,
yes.
We are allied with the birds.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we eat each other, but that's okay.
It's
circle
life.
What's a little bit of predation amongst friends?
Right. That's how. Aww.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. If you want to help out the podcast, leave that 5-star review or, you know, whatever. I'm not going to tell you how many stars to do. 5. But, or a review, or just subscribing to the podcast and downloading our episodes. It really helps out more than you probably even know. Thanks to the Space Cossacks for their extremely groovy song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday.